Delcast 10 a.m. meeting.
So
this meeting will be recorded, right?
Okay. Recording?
Yeah, this one.
How are you?
This afternoon, man.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes. Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
You
need my another one of my cards?
No,
okay.
Yeah.
We are expecting to be able to rest for me to these students. Wait for me. Or you can start. You are a bit of a company in the house.
Just start with a small background and see if I have no questions.
Sure.
Sure.
I think
you should. That's your five book started. So I'll just get started with a quick background on Nelcast. So Nelcast, we were established in 1982. We started commercial operations in 1985. We are a producer of ductile and gray iron castings for both the commercial market. We cater primarily to commercial vehicles and tractors segment. This is the biggest area of our sales domestically. And exports is also we cater to the commercial vehicle segment as well as passenger vehicles and off-highway segment in exports. A little bit of tractors as well. So in terms of you know where we're based out of Chennai. We have three plants. All three are located within 150 kilometers between Chennai and Nellore on the Chennai to Calcutta highway, just a little bit off the highway for all of them. And you know, fully we've completely modernized all of our plants and all of that. So everything still now runs on you know state of the art technology. In total, between the three plants, we have six lines that we run our production on. Wide range of sizes. Just a couple that I'll highlight. The I think the one that's probably the most interesting or intriguing is the line 2 in Petaparia, which is the last plant. The size of that line, the size of that line is 2.1 meter by 1.2 meters. So you can imagine, literally, you know, taller than any of us here. And so we're able to make parts that are, you know, larger and long, both in terms of length as well as weight, than anybody else in the country. And there's probably about, I would say, half a dozen of this size and capability. So that's one of our newest additions in
2017.
That's the one, right? That's the one, right? Line 2 in Petaparia is the one that I'm talking about. So we've done a lot of new product development in the last 3 years, and we've kind of now getting into that stage where things have started to stabilize. So we will get that to maybe about a, we believe we should be able to get that close to about a 40% or so, you know, capacity utilization by the end of the year. So that will be a big, I'd say, focus for us.
So line 2 would be what percentage of your total existing capacity?
So in Petaparia, about 60,000 tons is the capacity there. About 42,000 of that is from line 2 and 18,000 is from line 1.
18 and 42. And you expect 42 to reach 40% capacity utilization by end of the year?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's, you know, so in terms of this product, right, let's go to the product slide and we'll just highlight a couple of things in the products. So if you look at commercial vehicles, you know, the three products that we are fairly strong in and have a very strong market share is this forward differential carrier. So if you were to look across the country and you say in India, what's your market share? Forward differential carrier, that number is somewhere around 90%. If you look at the rear differential carrier, it's 70% or so. And if you look at the bogie suspension bracket, that also is something where we have a significant market share, probably close to 70% again. So these are, I think, three of the key products that we have focused on and really grown our business. In addition to that, there are several other products that we do. But, you know, this is one of these things that we believe is going to help us grow is also how the market segmentation is going to grow. So we believe that the tipper segment is going to do very well in the months to come and the years to come. Because as India continues its focus towards infra, and there's more and more push on the infra side, we believe that tipper sales is going to pick up, probably more so than the overall commercial vehicle market. And tippers, one, have a greater quantity of castings per vehicle, and the second is our share of that market is also higher, right? So almost every tipper has them. The rear differential carrier, every truck has one, right? Whether it's a tipper or non-tipper, it has. But on the tippers, the forward differential carrier comes in. So if you take a rear differential carrier, might weigh, let's say, about 50 kgs or something like that. You know, the forward differential carrier would weigh in at about 70, 75 kgs, right? So you'd get both the 50 and the 70, 75. And then you'd get the bogie suspension bracket. I think right now about 70% of all of these tippers have these bogie suspension brackets. Each vehicle requires two. Those weigh in anywhere between 70 kilos to 125-130 kilos.
One or two?
One. Leyland has a slightly different design. It's single piece, and that single piece has some additional functionality and weighs in actually at 375 kilos. So I think one of the things that we believe, looking forward, why we feel very optimistic about both the short, the next quarter or two, and kind of medium and long term, is because we believe this in the story in India on infra is just getting started, right? We think infra spend is going to keep going up. We think that's going to create a bigger investment in these equipment that are used for construction as well as shallow mining. And the requirement of castings is more. Our presence is more, and I think that's going to help us grow quite significantly in the domestic market in the next, you know, whether you talk about next couple of quarters or whether you talk about the next year or the next 5 years, right? Because I think this infra story in India is just in its, I don't think we've even got to the inflection point, right? I think we're going to have a pretty nice long runway on that.
So two questions. One is, I mean, if these three products contribute how much to your top line, in case you can talk about either in terms of your domestic sales or in terms of your consolidated sales?
So I would say if I was to look at, let's say about what last quarter, maybe about 38-40% or so of our revenue came from commercial vehicles.
Okay.
Right? And within commercial vehicle, if I had to, you know, narrow down to these products, I would say between these three products, it's probably about 50% or so. I'm just ballparking it, but it would be maybe slightly higher than 50% coming from these three products.
Overall, domestic sales, 20% of the domestic sales comes from these three products. Is that right?
20% of overall sales, I would say.
20% of our consolidated
sales. Yeah.
Okay.
More or less, right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So I don't have exact data. I'm just giving you based on from gut feel on that, but that would be the number I would expect to see.
Back of annual calculation in terms of casting requirement for similar tonnage of tipper versus a CV, how much more casting goes into a tipper versus a CV?
So I think we did this calculation a couple of years ago, right? Things changed a little bit from time to time. But when we did this, so on a typical CV, it depends on whether it's an ICV or an MCV or whatever it is, right? So I think typically what we found, excluding if we take the engine out of it, right, just the transmission, the and the axle and the suspension part of it, I think the calculation what we had done showed that it could be anywhere from 1300 to 1800 kgs on a tipper,
okay.
Whereas on a typical vehicle, it would probably be about 700 to 800 kgs.
Okay.
And ballpark, right? You make certain estimates in certain models, and some guys are heavier. The Tata might be a little bit heavier, Leyland may be a little lighter.
That's fine. And all these three products, if I'm not wrong, would be EV agnostic or IC agnostic, engine agnostic?
Yeah, so all three of these products. Okay, so I'll answer that in a more detailed way, right?
Sure.
Your specific question. There are two ways when commercial vehicle manufacturers talk about going towards the electrification. There's two ways that they can electrify a vehicle. One way they can electrify the vehicle, which is most likely going to be the more intermediate step of whatever electrification takes place. The first way of doing it is to actually just replace the engine and transmission with an electric motor, and then you find a place to where you can fit some batteries in and you electrify it. Which is a little bit more simple to make the transition from existing design. But if you really believe that the volumes on these trucks are going to be high, the way that you would design it would be a more efficient design, which would be an electric axle.
Okay.
So the electric axle doesn't have a centralized motor with a propeller shaft going into a axle.
Okay.
It actually has the motor mounted directly onto the axle.
Got it.
So what in that scenario, what we find is if that transition happens, right? But I do believe that transition is a little bit of the way away. The casting content per axle actually goes up.
Okay.
Obviously, the casting content in the engine came down, the casting content in the transmission came down, but the casting content in the axle actually goes up because the axle has additional role of holding that electric motor in place, right? So it has to bear the weight, so it requires to be more structurally sound. There's also no transmission, so there's a couple of gears that are assembled also into the axle. And more specifically, the differential carrier becomes much heavier.
Okay.
Right. So there is a program that we've been awarded, eight market, both the 6x4 as well as the 6x2.
Mm-hmm.
That's currently under development, expected to go into production only, I would think right now, late 2024, where we've actually won the business for this. And just as a comparison, on a typical, let's say, Class 8 truck, if we were to do, you know, the forward and the rear differential carrier, maybe we would be, it would be about, you know, $350 or so of value.
Okay.
On this E-axle, for the same type of a truck, it is about somewhere between $900 to $1,000 of value, right? So there's a significant amount of potential that's there. If you believe, you know, what is everybody is saying about heavy commercial vehicles, though, it's unlikely that electrification on the heavy commercial vehicle side will be significant. So I just want to temper what I said. Because they do believe hydrogen ICE might be the way forward, right?
I was more thinking from a downside rather than from the upside. So, I mean, what I understand from your comment is that downside is pretty much protected, right?
So, I mean, if you look at our total revenue and, you know, what percentage of our revenue comes from either engine related components or transmission related components, I think that number will be somewhere in the ballpark of about 5% or so.
5%. Thank you.
And then on the, you know, in terms of the tractor segment, we do pretty much the entire tractor is made out of castings, right? The entire body of the tractor, chassis of the tractor is made out of castings. Very large industry, obviously, in India in terms of numbers. But one that I don't think will have, you know, significant amount of upside or downside. I think it's a relatively stable, I think, when people talk about, you know, plus 5% or plus 10%, people think, you know, the world is such a beautiful place because the tractor industry is doing so well. Similarly, I don't believe that there'll be any significant downsides also in the tractor, right? So largely we think this is going to be a mid-single digit CAGR kind of a story in tractors.
Here, with any changes in the engine norms, does it have any implications for you?
So generally not much, because again, we're not present in the engine. We are mostly in the transmission and the chassis part. So it will not have a direct impact on us or our products, but it is possible that it will have an impact in terms of sales, right? Because there will be, let's say I know the tractor 6 months from now is going to be 1 lakh rupees more expensive, right? So there's going to be a pre-buy. And there's going to be a post-lull, right? So there is, you know, some of that will happen as emission norms change. It will not have any significant impact on the overall industry, I don't think so.
What percentage of our total sales come from
that? If I look at last quarter, I think it was 30%.
Okay.
Yeah, 29 point something percent. Yeah.
And this you're talking about consolidated.
Sorry?
Consolidated sales, right?
Yes, consolidated sales, yes.
What would be our market share in these categories that supply to tractors?
So our big customer on the tractor side is Taffy, okay. Right? So the Massey Ferguson tractors that they have. Again, our market share with Taffy on these products is probably, again, depending on the product, it varies, but it would probably be between about 35 to 60% of their requirement they buy it from us. Yes.
Outside of Taffy, you have no other?
So we also supply to Samedo Itza, we supply to Escorts, you know, we supply to Sonalika, we supply, you know, even within Taffy, they have the Asher Tractor brand as well. We supply to that plant in Madhya Pradesh as well.
John Deere also
goes
indirectly.
Yeah. So in this, one of the new products that's come for us is this four-wheel drive axle housing. I had mentioned a little while ago about the new plant and the bigger size. So this four-wheel drive axle housing was earlier being produced in China. And now it is produced in India, right? So, and produced by us in India, to be more specific. So these are axles, you know, that may be about 1.4 meters, and, you know, in terms of as farmers look for more productivity out of their tractors, you know, this is something that seems to be picking up quite a bit of steam, and a lot of tractors are moving in this direction. So, I mean, right now we're forecasting for next year that this four-wheel drive axle market will probably grow by about, you know, 20% or so. And for us, as a, you know, import substitute, we've been able to capture that market with, I mean, there's basically three guys that are making these axles in India. We've already captured the market with two of them. The third one is already, you know, there were 8 models, and 3 models have already completed testing out of the 8 models. So there will be a progression that will happen in that space as well, and we'll, you know, we'll grow there.
So in this segment, would you say that you've been growing lower than the industry or in line, or how would you categorize your, let's say, 5 years, 6 years long-term performance?
I would say we've probably, in this segment, in the industry, it's also not been as big a priority in terms of our, this thing. We've got a nice base load. The other part of it is, like I said, our biggest customer in the segment is Taffy. So some of it has to do with their growth and their market share and all of that, right? And if you look at, you know, at more specifically at micro markets, they have very good market share in states like Gujarat, Rajasthan and Andhra Pradesh. Right, so if these three states do well, they have a tendency to gain market share. If these three states do poorly, then they would lose market share. Right, so it's a little bit tied to what they're doing. It's a little bit tied to also, you know, some of this prioritization and that we are doing, which is to some degree also based on you know, realizations and, you know, variety of other things. So, and then off-highway equipment, we started about 10 years ago. It's now moved up to about 2.5-3% of sales. 2.5% of sales in the last quarter. Right. Yeah, about 1.68 was for the previous year, 2.5 for last quarter. Again, this is things where, especially if you take that monolithic axle housing, again, we are producing this in India. You know, it was this one, this particular part that's here was being produced by another foundry in India where the customer was just absolutely not happy with them. And so we are now the only supplier of this casting to them. But there are many others as well that were being imported from China that we've now substituted. The forklift steer axle is a completely new business that has come. We've developed these products for our customer who assembles the whole forklift axle and then supplies it to the U.S. market, to Hisaier as the end customer. So this is their next generation of forklifts. I think they're having some internal difficulties in some of the other components and proving out and all that because it's the next generation. So there have been a few delays in terms of the launch of this. So I think as this launches, it will be a completely new segment for us to be in the forklift market, albeit export, indirect export. Okay.
What could be the weight of this?
About 40 kilos.
Who is the
client? So that's only suppliers to is Dana, and their end customer is Hisaier, which is an incredibly large forklift manufacturer in the US. And this is meant for their forklifts. So it's still
some time away.
Well, it should have launched a year ago, but I think there must be some other difficulties that are delaying the launch, because I think when you want to launch a new product, everybody's excited about launching the new product, right? So if they're holding it back, there must be a reason.
What's the potential that they are giving?
Talking about maybe about 4,000 forklifts a month. And then on the railways, you know, the brake disc friction ring is something that we do. This goes on all the Rajdhani and Shatabdi trains, you know, running across the country. So we're a major supplier for that. Not directly to Indian Railways. There's a braking system supplier called Babtec. So one of the divisions of Babtec, Heavily Transport, is the one that does this. And then all of the metro rails across the country, we've been providing base plates as well. So the base plate is what the track actually sits on, and there are a couple of clips that are used to hold the track down, and then the four holes that you see is where a fastener goes in to hold it down onto the concrete. Passenger vehicles, we actually don't do anything for the Indian market.
You don't do anything for Vande Bharat?
No, not at the moment.
Nothing for Tejas?
Not for Tejas. Actually, I'm not sure. Tejas might have the same brake. I'm not 100% sure about
it. Surely nothing for Vande Bharat.
But not for Vande Bharat.
Vande Railways for us, not often.
2%, 3%. 3%. Yeah, 3% last quarter, yeah. And then passenger vehicles, we actually don't do anything domestic. We do export. We've got a couple of businesses. This is all businesses. These two businesses have started only in the last year, actually. One is, you know, and both are the differential carrier business that we do. One is for the Ford Super Duty series of trucks, and the other one is for the GM, the Chevy Colorado pickup truck. So we make the differential carriers for both of them. The Ford Super Duty has three versions of the axle, so you could get kind of the small, medium, or the large axle. If you were to go for the large axle, which is a 315mm ring gear, right, most torque you want, then 100% of those axles have our differential in it. On the Chevy Colorado, 100% of the of those trucks now are rear differential carrier in them. We also make the diff cases that go inside and where all the gears are assembled inside the diff case. We make those for the same Chevy Colorado vehicle, except for us that's an indirect export. We supply that to a plant in Pune and they assemble the gears and then it gets shipped out to the US. And the other thing, I think in terms of our overall revenue mix, if you add it up, last quarter our revenue from exports was at 31%. So this is something that's grown quite significantly over the years. FY15, we did 2.7 crore of export. FY23, we did 330 crore of export. 329 point something, but we did 330 crore of export. Q1, we did about 89 crore of export. Okay, so
Q1 is?
89. So that's a growth engine that seems to have really taken off for us. I think that's something that will continue to happen. So I think this year we're quite confident of a number around 400 or so. But we think that more and more global factors come into the picture, it seems to be aligning that India is the best place for these kind of castings. And I think we're in a very nice sweet spot where we're able to take advantage of this of the situation. So if you were to take, let's say, the trucks in the U.S., right, Class 6 to Class Class 8 trucks, we've actually got in excess of 20% market share on these forward and rear differential carriers right now. Forward and rear differential carriers, if you're just doing a back of the envelope calculation, right? The U.S. market probably sells about 300,000 or so of the Class 8 trucks, which require two differential carriers, about 300,000 or so of 250,000 or so of class 5, 6, 7 kind of trucks, which require one, right? So just do the math on that. It's about 840,000 or so, about 70,000 a month is the demand for differential carriers in the U.S. Today, we're already close to doing 20,000 of that, right? So we've got a 25% or so market share already that we've built in this segment. We see the opportunity to increase that. That's something that we're working towards. Other than that, there's a lot happening in, and the U.S. market has, I think, worked out very well because there's been a lot of reduction of capacities that has happened over the last three decades. Right, a lot of smaller guys have shut down. Regulations have made it more challenging on foundries in the U.S. The labor shortage that has hit since COVID also is something that's making it a lot more challenging for U.S. companies to, foundries especially, to find labor. So that's something that's, played very well in our favor. Through COVID, one of the things was we were actually able to gain market share despite of, a lot of logistics disruptions and everything that was happening. Because we were able to, so initially, we were a little concerned when India announced the lockdown, U.S. was still running, they just refused to slow down, but as the U.S. slowed down and then they started to pick back up, we were able to keep that supply chain filled and able to supply. So in fact, we had a couple of components where we had 70% market share with our customer, and over the through COVID, we actually moved that from about 70% to 100%. Right? There's a couple of other products where we had. So we've had a lot of good movement in terms of market share as well, and we've also developed new products and a lot of new businesses, so that also provided a big boost for us in terms of
In exports, how much is PVs or it's entirely?
So PVs is in exports, so I'm only talking about direct export, right? So whatever this 89 crores we said is direct export, doesn't include what we send to a customer and then they make some assembly and they export that. We're not counting that as an export, right? So if I take, it would be about 15, for the last quarter if I take, it would probably be about 15%, 15 to 20% would probably be coming out of the PV side, 20% I would say PV side. The rest is more of CV, there's a little bit of off-highway as well, primarily to Europe, got some components going into Italy and Hungary and Belgium that are on the off-highway side.
And the clients from the CV segment will be?
They'll be typically the tier ones. So these kind of products will be the guys that are making the axles. So this would be a Dana, a Detroit Diesel, a Meritor. So these guys would be the ones that would...
How is your EBITDA per kg different in export as the domestic market?
So certainly export is a higher EBITDA per kg. There's a, there's a little bit more of hidden costs that are there in export, right? For quality issue or anything like that, obviously the cost of rectifying that or cost of sorting the parts for that is higher. You have a greater pipeline of parts that you have to sort through as well. Then on top of that, the payment terms also are typically, I think for export, we average at about 120 days or so, 120 to 140, right? That's kind of the export payment terms. But in spite of all that, right, factoring all of that in, I think we would typically make about, 3 rupees, 4 rupees a kg extra over and above what we would make on a domestic business.
15 rupees per kg is what you mean? Broadly, 15 rupees?
Broadly, yeah.
Okay. Then what? Because payment terms are longer, so you are adding interest kind of a component here.
Yeah, so I'm factoring all that to say that it would be in that ballpark, right? Mm-hmm.
Now you would have reached 100% of their requirement of these two products that you said?
No, we haven't. So there's primarily three guys that are that let's say produce these axles, right? Out of which I think Meritor probably is the largest, and then Dana, and then Detroit Diesel. I think with Dana we might be close to 50% or something like that. Not maybe even a little bit less than that, right? Again, depending on which class of vehicles that you see, because there's about 50% we would be with them. With Detroit Diesel, we are at about 70%. With Meritor, we are not yet there, right? We haven't started business yet. I think there's a very high possibility we will by the end of 2024, but there's no guarantees yet.
Well, just to understand the journey here, so let's say 5 years back you said you hardly had any export business. From there you share with these customers. So whom have you displaced here, and you see any other competition emerging here, or what's the potential there?
So largely what we've displaced is local US suppliers.
Largely,
yeah. We won one business away from China, right? And it's a kind of a China plus one strategy in place. It's not going to be a significant, the business hasn't started yet. It's not going to be significant enough to move the needle, right? It's not going to be probably be 5-10 crores a year kind of business, right? So it's not significant enough that it will move the whole needle on the picture, but it's significant from the standpoint, I think it's the first time that we're seeing a business come from China. But other than that, everything else has been replacing of local suppliers who are either struggling with capacity, quality, cost, something in that range.
I think when we met last, similar opportunities can arise in Europe as well. I think, but Europe is a lot more quality conscious, a lot more localization. Do you see what you have seen in the US taking place in Europe as well?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of interest coming in from Europe. More recently, we thought it might probably come in a year ago, but I think people might have been a little more optimistic about the war and the energy cost and all of that, and even labor, right? Labor actually in Europe also has been extremely tight. The way that I see it, going forward, I see, when you've got low complexity and high volume type of parts, I think China used to just quote unbelievable prices, right? And that they used to win some of that business. I see some of that actually going back to either the US or to Europe, more from a standpoint of they can automate,
okay,
right? So if it's just a very high volume and a very low complexity,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that the cost of freight and packaging and all these other things get offset as well. But when it comes to when you add a little more complexity, right, medium to high complexity kind of products, I think we can really, you know, take over the world in terms of the casting demand, right? Because these are where you need somebody to actually do work, right? It's not things that can be very easily automated, again, because of the variety that's there.
So in the productivity, are there things in that which maybe until 2 years ago you thought that there is promise that they could, I mean, is there anything here also that you think is simple enough for them to take up, or mostly not?
So I think that's probably a big difference between what our product mix was like 10 years ago and what our product mix is today. Mm-hmm. I think we've changed our facilities a little bit to move more towards complex, and also the kind of new products that we've developed and won and moved is more towards the complex side. So I think we're in a significantly better position. I don't think there's any products that I think are at significant risk, right?
Last year you mentioned one thing. I mean, I remember you said there was some expo at Case New Ireland was going to invite people over.
Yeah.
So how was that experience? Because at that time it seemed like, and you also mentioned that, you know, there was
a
lot of potential felt at that point, but maybe certain things didn't happen.
Yeah, so I think they've kicked off that project. It's a project that's going to take, I think, a weird kind of timeline on it to do what they want to do. You know, they had that event in Milan last year. They had the CEO of the company there, obviously trying to show how important it is and all of that. And you know, there's been a lot of activity.
So
also
just to understand, because maybe this is representative of other customers, if at all, if you could guide us on that. And how are those discussions going ahead? So, you know, what happened, for example, from that as one event maybe?
So I think there's a few discussions that are still happening. Still, I would consider them still to be early stage discussions. I think some of the challenges that are there, though, is when you look at Europe, one of the challenges that's there in terms of the tractor segment is these are all very low volume, right?
Hmm.
For us, they're low volume. Tractor. Because Indian tractor industry is used, you know, when we talk about the industry, we're the largest in the world by number.
By number.
Right? But by size, they've got, you know, very large components and all of that, but in many cases aren't very high, right? So there might be something that on the face of it might look exciting, but you know, as you dig in, sometimes it might not seem as.
And if at all, is there a change in the way they're thinking? So last year they had their own immediate pressure.
Yeah.
And now with some of them receding, I remember you mentioned last time that, you know, the gap that used to exist between pricing in India and there used to be some 6-7%, and it had really increased. And that was, you had also said last time that is not sustainable. It will reverse. So with that, has their thought process changed, if at all?
So energy cost has, well, got better, and then again now is a little bit worse than it was before. But you know, the worst of it was at that particular point of time, right? It was August of last year that the energy crisis was really at full blast, and the question was, you know, will Europe have enough gas for the winter, right? But obviously they're buying more expensive fuel from the US and from Qatar and a few other countries, right? I think the other thing that's there in Europe, many of the foundries are older. They have melting systems that still utilize coke for melting rather than electric. We are 100% electric. And so I think some of the environmental pressures will also start applying into Europe. Like, we won't see that so much in the US. And I think the US is a little, you know, two-minded, I guess, depends on which party is in power.
Question remains that when we met last time, you mentioned that the European buyer at the margin has really in their thinking. Is that same vigor still there?
Yeah. I think it's still there. Okay. I think it's still very much there.
But then you also guided at that point that, you know, but these discussions, they happen and they take time. It could be really two and a half years. Is there anything over the last year that has made you change your thinking about the European side of things?
So there are some thoughts on Europe, I think, that we have that might be a little different. But I think the guys who are trying to do more complexity are the ones that will probably struggle more because of it there. Right? Because labor going up and then all these other challenges that will come in. And the question is, if the industry there is not really making good money, which it's not, right? They've lost quite a bit of money in the last couple of years, everybody in the industry there. In spite of going to their customers, getting energy costs back, all of that they've done, right? In spite of that, they've lost money in the last couple of years. The simple question is, if they have to invest, if a foundry has to invest $20-30 million just to keep the same level of production, just to become, is that going to happen, right? Are they going to, what are government incentives going to look like for that? We don't know any of that, right? If they, and if they're not getting significant incentives, then they will not be able to do any of that.
Okay. And so two questions. Aspirationally, with the export mix that has moved up the way it has, if it's at a 30% number, say around 3-4 years from now, 5 years, I don't know, whatever you're comfortable sharing, what might that number, what should that number be a good, I mean, what is a good number that you would aspire for on the export side, and hopefully that that helps even drive the EBITDA or KG up for the entire company?
So I think 3 to 5 years is actually a very long time from that perspective, right? In terms of, I just, you know, in 2012, in 2014, 15, you know, when we were quoting all these businesses that we were quoting at that time, you know, we thought our hit rates were going to be somewhere around 1 in 10, right? Maybe we'll quote 10 businesses, we'll try to follow up on them, we'll get 1 out of 10. Mm-hmm. It ended up being close to 8 out of 10, right? And it can change drastically from business to business, type of product, all of that. So it's a little difficult to project that far out. Mm-hmm. Some businesses are slow to develop. So, for example, the passenger car side of it, the Chevy Colorado one that I said,
you mentioned that
we got awarded that in 2019, mm-hmm. right? And it's really ramped up over the last probably 9 months or 9-10 months or so is when it's actually kind of ramped up, right? Whereas again, 2019 was the was when we were awarded the business. The expected launch was to be in early 23, it ended up being end 23, but okay, I mean, that's one business. And then we've had other businesses where, you know, it launches within 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. So right now we've got some business that we're talking, which is a, they would like to launch by September, October of 24, right? So we've got some business we're talking about that's got that. We've got other businesses where a customer is literally willing to give us a drawing today and say, okay, 6 months from now, I want to get into production, right? We, that's also happened.
Meritor opportunity, whenever it comes, maybe it comes next year. How prepared are we? What's the size of the opportunity? Do we need to do anything for that?
So I think in terms of capacity, whatever, within the three plants, we will do this capacity. I think we mentioned also in previous calls that we do have the ability to increase that capacity at our Poneri plant by about 20,000 tons or so, and then at our Kadapariya plant also by adding some additional furnaces and all that by about another 30,000 tons. So we have some ability to be relatively quick in terms of reacting to capacity requirements. Quick meaning, let's say, 1 year kind of a thing, right? So, I mean, so it's hard to project right now. I mean, if you look at, you know, what is, you know, possibly, what is the best case scenario where everything, all, you know, they say, okay, you quoted for 15 parts, we're going to give you all 15. That would actually be a fairly significant number. It would be in excess of 100 crores, you know, so.
Annually.
Annually.
Where are they currently sourcing from?
Locally within the US.
So their cost is, compared to their competitors, they're already quite expensive. So what has taken them time to still not move? Why are they still not?
I think this organization a little bit, and then also the acquisition by Cummins has slowed things down, because these are decisions that have to be taken at the US, right? So as this acquisition has happened, also there's been a lot of turnover in the team there and all of that, right?
And automotive Excel, the company, does not make those products.
Not really. No, the different. I think they are a little more customized for each market, right? So Indian market is a little different. So the gear sizes, shapes, will be a little different. So the housing is also a little different.
This product itself would be completely different, right? Automotive Excel is just monkey Excel. You make
multi-axle parts? Yeah, we make for automotive axles as a customer of ours, absolutely, yeah.
So automatically, Meritor would have kind of looked at you, right?
Yeah, so, but it's because, you know, JV and this thing, there's a separate, you know, purchasing team. So we actually supply these components, right, the forward differential carrier to Meritor in Europe. And we've been doing that for the last couple of years. And I would actually argue that we probably supply complex parts that they require for that for the European operations. So
on utilization, you see that going up towards 80% mark in the year, you think so?
Yeah, I think in the next year to two, we believe that we will be there at that 80%.
And if at all, any CapEx is pretty, you think it's more of just additional, some incremental?
Yeah, I think definitely in the next year and a half, 2 years or so, I don't foresee any kind of a greenfield expansion or anything like that. Right, we'll do some small things within our plants to kind of squeeze a better capacity utilization out of the plant. So we will do some amount of kind of more regular, smaller capex type of thing. I don't see a huge, you know, like a 100 crore capex for a greenfield or anything like that happening in the next 2 years.
And from the supply side, I mean, from the competition side, do you see response picking up in general? People are adding capacity. We did some challenge check that capacities are, I mean, after a long hiatus almost,
yeah,
people are really importing again. Second line, I mean, old lines, etc. abroad. What is, if you have any comments on that?
So honestly, old lines from abroad, I've heard, you know, one or two cases.
Should you be worrying about that at all for Nelcast? Because, or maybe those are smaller or less complex things than you do. Should we be worrying at all about that?
See, I think one, there's going to be a domestic market growth, and two, there is going to be a export market growth out of India. Right? I think that's a fact that's going to be there, not just for us, but for the whole market. We believe, you know, with the position that we're in, with the kind of product mix that we're in, we can ride that wave probably higher. Right? Mm-hmm. But I think everybody is going to try to ride that wave. So there is going to be addition of capacity. There has been some addition of capacity, but not, I wouldn't say it's an appreciable wave. Right? If you look at, let's say, for example, you know, the overall capacity of the Indian market, the demand or casting production in India, I should say, it's probably about 12 million tons. Right, is a million tons of capacity getting added a year? No, I don't think it would even be half a million. Right? At least at the players that are, I would say, more established or something, will be probably talking about maybe a couple hundred thousand tons a year getting added. Right, not nothing that's scary or concerning to me.
I mean, maybe going back to this question, where can export as a percentage go in 2 years? Like, not 3 to 5 years, but in 2 years, can it become 40% of our overall top line? Is that a realistic number?
I think, yeah, something around, you know, 35-40%.
Currently, we are targeting for next 2 years. 40%.
Yeah, I think 40, and if you're very optimistic about the domestic market like I am, then 40% is on a very much
higher.
Earlier that the Meritor can come is 24, what, wait, later?
And where can something like, I mean, you already have something signed up that's on very small. And then Europe just one can, how far are we from that kind of opportunity?
Good question. I don't know. We've got one product where we are already there. We have been there for a few years and under development on that product. But I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. And everything else remaining the same, commodity prices remaining the same. Where do you see EBITDA per kg going in the next 2 years?
I think our goal is, I think that we've stated publicly also, is to get to about 15. Overall company.
Okay.
Right? And we think that's very much possible. 15 rupees per kg. Yeah.
And then it's like 25 for the whole year.
That's what we think we will. Right. I think we should at least achieve that, because a lot of that's going to come, you know, from obviously three things. Right. One, you know, we're looking at how we reduce our costs continuously. The second is operational efficiencies, and the third one is product mix. Right? So I think between these three things, we feel quite good that number of 15 could be reached in the next couple of years. Right?
Throughput, I think last year you did about 90,000. 84,000. So what's your outlook for the next year and the year?
So current year, we think we should be, you know, somewhere around 100,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, give or take, let's say 5-7%. So I think that's where we expect to be in the current year. We think there's a potential for next year. I'm being a little cautious about projecting next year because we know it's an election year, and sometimes maybe when it comes to infra and things like that, because the vote on account budget kind of process, not as this thing, but I mean, potentially we would try to think, look at a number of, let's say, 115, 120 for next year. I think that would be what we would hope for, and we think the market should be able to support that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
This was 10 a.m. meeting, Nelcast.